Okay. That was exciting.
I'm Sally Greenwald, and I am an MD and PhD student at Tufts University, and I'm extremely excited to be standing here talking to you guys about a research project I've been working on for the past 2.5 years. I first got invested in this area of research. I had spent a few years working back and forth in an outpatient clinic setting in Haiti, and I was really struck by the women in their 40s and 50s and 60s who were coming in with bleeding, and they ended up having a disease that I was routinely screened for at my yearly visit with my physician. And it really struck me that there was, you know, a big impact of this disease there. The title of my talk is Cervical Cancer Screening Program Using HPV Subtyping and See and Treat Cryotherapy. I have no relationships to disclose. What I'll talk about today, the current impact of cervical cancer in Haiti, previous efforts, my project in particular, the limitations of my study, conclusions, and recommendations moving forward. So whenever we think about the burden of disease in an environment which many of us are not very familiar, it's nice to have a reference point. So I'll start with the United States. The incidence of cervical cancer here is 8.1, mortality is 2.4. Comparing that to Uganda, the incidence is 22.6, mortality is 15.6. When you look at Haiti, the incidence is 93.3 and the mortality rate is 53.5. So it's higher than it is in the United States, as we would expect, but it's also important to note that it's significantly higher than other developing countries. And this has been a problem for quite some time. In fact, there have been many previous efforts aimed at decreasing the burden of disease in Haiti, in particular. One of which is VIA, visual inspection with acetic acid, in which white vinegar, you can actually use it for cooking, is painted on the cervix, and areas of the cervix that turn white indicate areas of dysplasia. It's a screening tool that's very cheap, it's sensitive, and it takes very few resources to do. The cons are it's very operator dependent, so a person is trained to look at the cervix. Some areas that turn white are actually just indicative of normal cell turnover, and some areas that turn white really do indicate dysplasia. So there's many false positives in this screening method. Pap smears, that's the gold standard that we use here in the United States. And basically, you take a brush, you brush it on the cervix. You can either put it in solution, but ultimately you plate it on a slide and you look at it under a microscope. Pros to that are it's gold standard. Cons are you need a pathologist to read it, and the supplies are extremely costly. See and Treat Cryotherapy is similar to VIA, in which you paint the cervix with the same white vinegar, which is very cheap, but you can use what's called colposcopy, which is a microscope to look at the cervix to kind of have a more specific view of the cervix. And then instead of going down a further diagnostic pathway, which is what you would do with VIA, you go right ahead and you treat the patient right there. The pros are it's WHO recommended. There's no loss to follow-up. The cons are you ultimately end up treating some false positives. Vaccination, which is my personal area of interest, is what most people have been, you know, really talking about recently in terms of, you know, what can we do, not just in Haiti, but also around the world. It vaccinates against HPV, which is the virus that causes the majority of cervical cancer. The pros are it's primary prevention. The cons are it only protects against certain subtypes of HPV, and it's also extremely expensive. So as far as what I did in Milo, which is in northern Haiti, as I mentioned, VIA is what I started with. So the women in my study were given VIA, and then I evaluated VIA as a screening method, and I compared it to the pap smear, which is the gold standard. So the women received the pap smear. I then established a prevalence of abnormal cervical pathology. From there, we went on to the See and Treat Cryotherapy protocol using colposcopy, which is the microscope that I mentioned to get a better view at the cervix. And a biopsy was taken so that afterwards we could confirm whether or not those women who we went ahead and treated indeed had cancer in need of treatment in the first place. And lastly, I did HPV subtyping. So participant, 250 women ages 18 to 45. They were not pregnant as determined by their LNP or the use of family planning. The average age of my participants was 31.7. The average number of lifetime sexual partners was 1.9. I do think this is a little bit of an underestimate. Whenever you have people, particularly women, self-reporting number of sexual partners, it's often an underestimate. Additionally, when you look at the fact that less than about 40% of the women are married, while almost 70% have children. So I do think that that's a little bit of an underestimate. And 15.1% ended up being HIV, or were known to be HIV positive. The project. So women were recruited from multiple churches. I went with the Haitian physician that I was working with. I spoke at the churches. I said, you know, we're doing the screening program. It's free. It's, you know, these weeks. It's 8 to 5. Show up. We'd love to have you. 250 women showed up. They had both pap smear and VIA. So if you look at the VIA numbers, 182 women came back positive on VIA, which is an extremely large amount of women testing positive. So, you know, it really made me think about whether or not that was an appropriate screening tool. You can also see that comparing that to the gold standard, 31 of the women who tested positive on pap smear did test positive on the VIA, so an extremely sensitive modality for screening the VIA was. The positive predictive value was 17%, and the negative predictive value was 100%. Those 31 women who were ultimately found to have abnormal cervical pathology, either high-grade or low-grade squamous intraepithelial lesions, 16 returned for follow-up, 51.6% returned for follow-up. Of those 16 women, 15 had biopsies. One woman who was 18 years old and had no children didn't have a biopsy. That's what we would do in the United States is women in their teens who had not had children. We wouldn't biopsy them. There is a risk of preterm delivery, an increased risk, so we did not biopsy that patient. Of those 15, 14 had cryotherapy and HPV subtyping, and 11 tested positive for a high-risk HPV subtype. So HPV subtyping. There are many subtypes of human papillomavirus that have been identified, and 16 and 18 are those known to be the most high risk. They are responsible for 70% of the cervical cancer in the United States. Of the 14 women who received HPV subtyping in my study, 11 or 68% tested positive for the high risk HPV. 3 tested negative for HPV. And for completion's sake, I want to look at the number in terms of all those women who had abnormal cervical pathology. So 11 of 31 women had high-risk HPV subtypes. This is obviously a gross underestimate considering that almost half of the women did not return for follow-up and are not included in this number, but I want to just make the point that there's clearly a prevalence of high-risk HPV subtypes in this population. As far as abnormal cervical pathology, I found that 31 of 250, or 13.2%, had abnormal cervical pathology, as found in this study. That's also an extremely high number compared to the United States, that we report anything from 7 to 10%. In terms of the See and Treat cryotherapy, so 14 women ultimately had colposcopy and cryotherapy. 2 of the 14 were identified on biopsy after having the treatment. To ultimately have had what we think of as cancer. It's cervical intraepithelial neoplasia, stage 2 and 3. So if you can extrapolate that for the number needed to treat, that's 7 women that we would need to go ahead and treat on the See and Treat protocol in order to end up treating one case of cancer. Both of those women ultimately were found to have a high-risk strain of HPV. In terms of the study limitations, it was a convenient sample, so this is possibly the worried well. Oftentimes when you let people know that you're offering care, and those who show up are those that are, really in tune to their health care and worried about, what state of health they're in and really proactive about seeking care. Also, these women were clearly clued into the social and religious groups. That's how they heard about the study. And they also lived close enough to the town that they could make it, to the hospital I was working at. So I would say that this study actually cannot be you cannot extrapolate to women living in a more rural environment because of that. Obviously, the end of this sample was a struggle. In terms of, we started out with 200, recruiting from an entire community. We went down to 250, and I ultimately did HPV subtyping on 14 women. So that's one of the problems with this study. And lastly, loss to follow-up. It is always a problem in any study, loss to follow-up. It's extremely hard in developing countries when you have a difficult time contacting the women. So 15 women who had abnormal cervical pathology did not return for the study. And announcements were made, phone calls, we returned to church several times. What ultimately happened, 6 of them have since returned to the clinic to seek care, and they were provided with See and Treat cryotherapy, so they were 6 more women were treated. But we did not do HPV subtyping, and they were not included in the results that I've shown you for that reason. as far as conclusions that we can draw from this study, there is a high prevalence of abnormal cervical pathology in Haiti. 13% is a very high prevalence for abnormal cervical pathology. Even though it's a sample of convenience, I think that because of the worried well phenomenon, this is likely an underestimate. High-risk HPV subtypes are often present. So HPV subtypes 16 and 18 were present in this study. And also, CNTree cryotherapy using colposcopy is a feasible solution in low-resource settings. So the clinic in which I worked at, another outcome of this research project was that the Haitian OBGYN and his two colleagues were trained on colposcopy and CNTree cryotherapy, so they are now running a cervical cancer screening program using this WHO protocol, and it is definitely feasible in low-resource settings. So while feasible, more studies are needed to determine whether or not it is worthwhile. So if our ultimate goal is to decrease disease burden, more research is needed to be done, particularly in the clinic in which I was working and elsewhere, to determine if it's a worthwhile venture. And lastly, what excites me the most is that this study shows that it is possible to do HPV subtyping, you know, in communities in which you are strapped for resources. And I think that it's really important to, you know, further investigate this. Larger studies using random samples are needed to determine the actual presence of HPV subtyping before recommendations for or against vaccination can be made. So for me, this is, you know, this is really interesting to me because I feel like vaccination is always a great, it's a great solution. It's primary prevention. And before a discussion can take place regarding cost and implementation of this, I think it's really important that we set up an accurate prevalence of exactly what subtypes we have in Haiti and what exactly we will be vaccinating against. Because otherwise I fear that we'll be funneling a lot of energy and a lot of resources into yet another, you know, well-intentioned but misguided public health intervention in Haiti. And so I think this is an important time in which we, you know, we step back and we establish what it is we're exactly aiming to treat. And from here, you know, I love to think about, once it is proven that perhaps vaccination is the appropriate way to decrease disease burden, you know, how will we go about doing that? So HPV is a vaccine that has to be given 1 month and then 2 months and then 6 months later. So a vaccine with three phases as it is now is, you know, pretty hard to do in this type of environment. Additionally, the cultural and communities there are extremely religious. And so with the sexual stigma associated with the HPV vaccine, it's really interesting to think about, you know, how we as a public health field would go in and appropriately insert this intervention. But in the meantime, we all need to stop, sit back, and establish an actual prevalence of HPV subtypes so we can make an informed and accurate decision as to whether or not vaccination is appropriate. Thank you.
Very nice. I think we have time for a question or two of clarification. Donna?
Yes, please.
Hi, I'm Donna Gray from Partners in Health.
Oh, hi.
Given that the panel is actually health system strengthening, did you test for any other STDs when you had the women in for the
I did, yeah. I guess I didn't put that in there. We've tested for Trichomonas, BV. Those are the only two Canada, but yeah, mostly Trich and BV. And the percentage of women who had one of the two STIs that we were testing for was 60%, which is additionally extremely high and definitely maybe what you're getting at is associated somewhat to the HPV. I know that you guys are doing big prevalence studies in Laogon and elsewhere, and so we're waiting for you to publish those reports. So whenever you want to put those out, I'm waiting.
Sue Boldy has actually published on 16 and 18 prevalence.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions?
Good question. One more? Okay. Great.
Thank you very much.